I'm Mike Gillis.
And I'm Casey Doran. And this is Radio versus the Martians.
I think that when you look at like new Hollywood stuff, there were a lot of American movies being made in the 60s and 70s that were a lot more ambiguous and a lot more
sad ending sci-fi.
Well, yeah, like, well, and not even sci-fi, but like you have.
I just look at Bonnie and Clyde as a great
Bonnie
example.
Bonnie and Clyde is an
example. You spend 2 hours with these people and it's a fucking insane end.
And it's like that ending is just like minutes of them just getting shot up. It's really, but like, then look at like The Conversation or Blow Up, which are both really, which are both like, it's De Palma and Coppola remaking Blow Out, or I'm sorry, it's Blow Out and The Conversation, which are remaking Blow Up, which is a movie that is kind of famously kind of a fuck you about, like, well, you don't get an ending. Sorry. Yeah. Like, you don't, this is, I don't owe you anything, right?
I think I coined the term as those movies are an example of the enhance genre. Enhance.
Yeah.
But there was definitely a change between the 70s and the 80s. I think we all felt it.
Yeah.
You weren't going to do anything like Easy Rider or Silent Running
or
Soylent
Green.
Well, the
high concept picture. It's the high concept picture.
But you wanted a feel-good sci-fi picture. I mean, it's one of those things where I think like the same year you had both John Carpenter's The Thing and E.T., one of these was a massive hit, and one of these was a flop and a creative, it was a creative success, but a critical failure. And it's one that I think only the years of retrospective and reevaluating, that's not a word, but it's been reevaluated. But yeah, it's definitely one where you look at a lot of movies that were flops around that time that people just were not having. They didn't want an ambiguous dark ending. They wanted something very different. You can see this in the evolution of like the Rambo series too, where the first one very nearly ended with Rambo's suicide in First Blood. And
yeah, they actually shot that ending and then they changed it.
Cowards.
But yeah, I think it's a much more powerful ending. But I also think that when you
But you don't do sequels to like, you know, Easy Rider where you go, okay, well those guys didn't die. They're actually superheroes in the sequels.
There is a sequel to Easy Rider.
Oh god, that's right.
They made it
really?
It's relatively recent. I'd have to look it up.
I believe it's direct to video.
It is direct to video and it is hot garbage.
Does it star Larry the Cable Guy?
It does not, but I think that's the only thing it's missing.
I think it's kind of an ego piece.
I feel like the boys, the We Hate Movies boys covered it. It's called Easy Rider 2, The Ride Home, came out in 2012.
Fuck
and
me.
It stars Jeff Fahey is in it.
Okay.
So, you know.
Is he okay? Do we need to pass the hat for Jeff Fahey?
You know what? He was in Alita. He was in Alita Battle Angel. He had like a bit.
Oh, that's right. He was like the dog guy.
Yep.
He was great. See, the thing, Jeff Fahey is great. Let's rescue Jeff Fahey from the Easy Rider 2s of the world.
Even though he's in just lots of just terrible direct-to-video, you know, he's like, he's going to play like third bill whenever you have like a Mel Gibson movie now or whatever. He'll be like the also Jeff Fahey. But yeah, fuck, man, he's still making money.
But is Jeff Fahey the guy you get when you don't, you can't get insurance for Mel Gibson?
I would be really interested to see the overlap. I think Jeff Fahey, you know, I think he brings a certain kind of gravitas. Like, I mean, yeah, he makes a lot of like, I don't want to call it dreck, but you know, a lot of direct, you know, direct to video or now VOD stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, he's works,
good.
Right?
Like, he's good. And, yeah. and you don't have the problems you have with a Mel Gibson. He's not going to like flip the catering table in a rage.
Exactly.
He's not going to call the makeup lady sugar tits.
He's going to show up and he's going to give you Jeff Fahey and that's what you want. That's why you're putting him in there. So
I want to talk about something with you guys that I don't really have an answer for, but the best we can do is sort of collectively speculate. And it's about the world of streaming. We're entering a new era of streaming, and I have no idea what it's going to look like when all the pieces stop moving. But I'm going to say, as somebody who has subscriptions to streaming services, as a consumer, it feels like it's getting worse.
Well, yeah, I think that's actually one of the big things about the strikes happening right now with SAG and the WGA is that last time the contracts were up, it was, you know, somebody, this guy pops up on my TikTok For You page all the time, and he's a writer, and he was like, last time it was Paramount and Warner Brothers, and now, you know, what basically happened was the writers made a deal with one of the others, like Lionsgate or something.
Sure.
And they were like, all right, we have a tentative agreement, so you can come and work for us. And then all of a sudden Lionsgate was able to work again. And all the other studios went, oh, well, shit, now we got to go to the table, because otherwise Lionsgate's going to start. Because we have to remember, like, studios are not friendly, right? They're in competition with each other.
Right.
But now it's all tech companies, and these tech companies think they're going to break these unions. But really what's going to happen is they're going to realize...
It's not even that. That's the crazy part is, like, you would think, you'd imagine it'd be like, well, you've got your Netflixes and your Amazons. But the thing that I, to me, is... like, that really throws the wrench in the whole thing is, like, the Discovery buying HBO, yeah. And where it's just like, yes, it's another media company.
Fewer and fewer companies are buying bigger and bigger conglomerates. Yes. And it's like this. But also, it's like the blob of flesh from Akira that's just taking in everything. And pretty soon, it's like, the sad thing is the bigger these things get, the more the mindset of these companies moves less away from art and more towards, well, how do I maximize profit? How do I minimize costs? And you always minimize costs through cutting things like labor and creating a bunch of cheap reality programming where you can always find somebody who will appear on those shows for practically free and a bunch of writers that are desperate enough to work for almost nothing. And you don't have like special effects costs or anything. And I really look at, say, like Max as it was relaunched. Because they made you download a whole new app.
Wait, are you talking about the place to watch HBO?
Oh, my God. What is it with Warner Brothers and these shitty subtitles? And they can't trust. It's like, Max, the place to watch HBO. Pennyworth, the origin of Batman's butler. But, I mean, what ends up happening is the promise that we were all given when there was this sort of explosion. In the beginning, there was Netflix. And at Netflix, because they were the only person doing it, they were the only streaming game in town for a little while. Everyone wanted their stuff on Netflix. You know, it didn't matter if you were a Disney show or if you were a show on AMC, if you were a sitcom like Seinfeld or Friends or Frasier, you wanted to be on Netflix. It was a new stream of income. It was creating relevance for your old properties again, and people were rediscovering stuff. So it's like, you could see everything. I could watch like an old Disney movie. I could watch Frasier. I could watch Community, all of these things. But what started happening is this got so successful that a lot of these studios were looking at it and going, you know, we own a lot of stuff. Why are we licensing this out when we have a big enough library, you know, something like Warner Brothers or something like Disney or something like NBC Universal? And you're like, well, why don't we just do our own thing? Why don't we take our entire massive library and have somebody subscribe to just that? There's a lot of people that would go like, you know what? There is a lot of Paramount stuff. Why are we licensing out Star Trek, all of our Star Trek shows to Netflix, when we could not only create new Star Trek, but have all of that old Star Trek exclusively here? So like the promise we had was that you'd have access to this massive library, that you subscribe to Paramount Plus or Disney Plus or any of these things. Just HBO Max, you're talking all of Warner Brothers movies. You're talking all of Cartoon Network. You're talking Hanna-Barbera, the Bugs Bunny cartoons, DC Comics.
Sure.
The HBO library, that is a massive thing we're talking about. That is impressive library. But now they're taking stuff down, including stuff that only ever existed on the streaming networks. Like Infinity Train is probably the most famous version of that.
Yeah.
Where it's this critically acclaimed show that people love that has never gotten a physical media release. That the only way you could watch it is to subscribe to Max or pirate. But the only way you could legally watch it is to, and now they take it down. So functionally, Infinity Train does not exist.
Yeah.
So the people who made that show and are incredibly proud of it and want new people to discover it and find it and, you know, give them some royalties, there's no way to do that. There's no way to keep that show going. And I think it hit me home finally in a very personal way that I logged onto Hulu And I noticed that Lodge 49 wasn't on there anymore. Lodge 49 is, in my opinion, one of the best TV shows of the last decade. I loved it to death. It was for two seasons on AMC. It was never a ratings dynamo. It never set the world on fire. There's a tiny group of people who loved it. We loved it a lot. It was a miracle it got renewed for a second season in the first place. I think the people at the studio loved it to death and wanted to give it a chance, but there's only so many chances you can give it when it's not making money, because capitalism. And it got canceled, but it still existed on Hulu. It never got a DVD or Blu-ray release. I would gladly give them money for a complete series box set. In a heartbeat, I want to give you guys money for this.
Yeah.
I know that the people who made this show would get a check. That's great. I know there's a lot of people who would love to own it, but I had it on Hulu and now I don't. And the only way I've found that I can watch it online is to buy individual episodes on the Google Play Store or Amazon. And I'm like, what the fuck? I want to give you money. You have a thing that I want. I know that it's not a big enough thing. Like, I know Stranger Things and Orange is the New Black are big enough streaming exclusives that you're going to create DVDs for, but not everything on streaming is going to be that popular.
Yeah, only the top 5%.
And now Disney's doing it too.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw this. Disney took the new Willow show that's not even a year old off of Disney Plus last month.
Oh, wow. So I was just reading an article from Mike Flanagan. I don't know if you guys know. He's the horror director. He did the Midnight Mass show on Netflix.
He did Return to Hill.
Return to Haunted Hill?
No, Haunted Hill House.
He also did that, that I thought really good Stephen King adaptation, Gerald's Game, about What's-Her-Face cutting off her own hand.
Awesome. I read that book.
What is it with poor Carla Gugino getting limbs cut off, man?
It was a great movie. Anyway, so Mike Flanagan was like, I've had this relationship with Netflix. Like, Netflix is the top. If you're a filmmaker, fuck, you want to have Netflix give your movie, because that's the number one streaming service in America, right? If you can't get it in a theater, better be Netflix. They started removing his stuff, some of his smaller things. He was pissed, and he was like, "Can we at least get like a physical release, a Blu-ray or DVD release?" And he said, "Okay, well, yeah, there was." There's an idea being floated by some people that there would be like a Flanagan-verse box set, which is like, I hate the idea of there's something called a Flanagan-verse, but I'd be happy if it were out there, right?
Mm-hmm.
They didn't email him back, and then several months later, he was like, whatever happened with that? And in a completely nonchalant way, they were just like, yeah, we floated it, but it's not going to happen. So he's just like, there's these, the only time I've seen that he had seen like a physical release that he liked was going to a horror convention and seeing someone who had pirated a Blu-ray set. So he bought some of them himself just to check them out and was like, this is good work. And he's like, I'm so pissed because I know that Netflix isn't going to come back around on this. The time to have done it has already passed. And he's like, then the only people who are keeping it alive are the pirators. Or he said archivists. He just said, then they're the archivists because they don't give a shit. They don't even, if they wanted to make a modest amount, maybe $100,000 selling Mike Flanagan Blu-ray box sets, they could, but they're not going to.
But that's the thing, is it's held hostage by these companies. There's no other person who can put it out. There's clearly people who want it. There's clearly enough people out there that they made the effort to, they thought that they would sell it at a convention at a bootleg booth. They clearly thought it was worth burning it onto a Blu-ray. So there is an audience for it, but it's like, if it's not enough of an audience that they smell the money, that they're not going to do it. And it's just, this is one of those places where I'm starting to think more and more that maybe the era we need to start moving back into is a physical media era, where I'm thinking more and more about, I kind of want to really own a couple things, not everything. I'm never going to buy as many DVDs as I did in the early 2000s.
No.
There are certain things that I want to have, like, say, Star Trek The Next Generation or Columbo, that I want to own it because I can't trust that even the stuff I buy digitally I really even own, and I kind of want to always have it, no matter what.
I've definitely started to buy more physical media again, stuff on 4K a lot more that I wanted. I bought Warner Brothers because they're doing their 100-year thing. They just released all the Superman movies, all the Christopher Reeve Superman movies, and like
they try to sneak Superman Returns into that set.
No, I actually thought it was going to be, but I don't think it is.
It's like when somebody invites their shitty friend to the picnic. Right? It's like, I guess you're already here.
The guy that just stands in the corner and stares at your friends, and you're like, ah,
I can't throw you out.
But it is a steel book that contains all the other steel books. It's a beautiful set. I haven't watched any of them yet because this is what I do, right? But like, I think that really what's going to happen is people are just, you had cable and then cable started to suck because it was too expensive and you had to deal with these garbage companies. And so streaming like Netflix and then Hulu, and then it was like, oh, well, streaming is a way to kind of get some of that stuff back and not pay for all this crap that you're not watching. And then all the media companies, all these companies were like, well, now we need to have a streaming app and we need to consolidate all this shit. And it's like, well, we're going to take it off because we're not making money off of it. And it's like, well, then people are going to just start pirating again. And, like, at the end of the day...
The thing is I don't think people are going to start pirating again. I think that we've moved... I'm a rare beast. I'm an old man. I have my set in my ways. I'm firmly established in the...
You tell that cloud.
The sharing groups that I'm with. But I... Like, what was I... Oh, there was a story on PC Gamer about... Okay, so a game was released on Steam. And small developer, you know, like a small developer, like a 3 or 4 person team developed this game, and something screwy happened and Steam had to take the game off. And so that basically means, oh, you can't buy it anymore, but if you have bought it, you could still download it. However, the dev team was still working on these problems and they were like, okay, if you want to download like the nightly builds or whatever, we're just going to upload it on a torrent server on our computers and then you can use BitTorrent. And there was this deluge of kids who are like, what's BitTorrent? Like, I don't know how to use this. What is it? I think we've moved it because everything's so available. We've moved so far away from it. People aren't going to be finding their way back to it. It's just going to be old hobbyists.
I mean, I think I don't necessarily disagree with you, but I do think there is, I always think of the original trilogy, right? Mm-hmm. The Holy Trilogy. You can absolutely find those restored in 4K without unaltered the original like theatrical versions, because somebody took that. There's always going to be somebody that takes the time to do it. And I think that like, I think what's interesting to me is that this isn't like TV where people were like, all right, I'm going to watch Discovery and like, or I don't have a choice because I have this cable bundle. Now it's going to be like, well, you know, I got Netflix for Sandman and now Sandman's season two isn't happening. So I'm going to cancel my Netflix subscription.
Yeah.
And especially people already hate these streaming services. Like they're not happy with them.
Have we accidentally like reverse engineered cable all over again?
I don't know what's going to happen, but I do know that these streaming companies better hope and pray that, I think it's really dumb right now where we have kind of, we're having a resurgence of support for unions on this huge level. And we've already seen in the last couple of years, unions getting big concessions from people. I think it's real dumb to fuck with the unions.
Yeah.
And I think especially when, okay, I can understand that you're some idiot executive that makes bad decisions for your corporation and you're going, well, we can replace the writers. And I'm like, well, you're not replacing Tom Cruise. You're not replacing Brad Pitt. You're not replacing.
They're going to try replacing, with like AI.
Well, but they right now they can't.
But the thing is, you can't because there's still a human mind there that makes creative decisions. Well,
but the thing is, and that this is like, I would be really interesting if, you know, in a few months or a couple weeks, you know, Fran Drescher comes out and says, we're calling for a boycott of streaming services.
Right.
Because I think people are just looking for an excuse to like cut and run. And I think if that happens, those people that are running Demonoid or BitTorrent or the Pirate Bay, they're going to start becoming a lot more popular because there's a group of people that I think is still fairly large that's just lying in wait that have been maintaining these sites and maintaining their libraries and have things on that have like whole Plex servers of media that are just ready to fucking go.
Yeah.
The only caveat of that that I'll say is let's say I've been a part of some of the risen and fallen. Actually, this is the one thing about the torrenting has become so unpopular, has waned in popularity, that sites have just been closing down because people just don't have the time. Those people who would spend 15, 20 hours a week working on stuff, just no longer, after 10 years, don't want to do it anymore. There's a lot of gatekeeping in those communities. And yes. So it isn't like the early mid-2000s when it was just sort of like, we have these giant P2P networks.
But like the minute a TV show came out, it would go out on the server.
Yeah.
And it still does. To be honest, it still does. It's still there if you have Usenet still exists. Usenet's been around since the beginning of the internet. It's still the place that everything that will be released on the internet goes to some board on Usenet and you can get it.
But it's the same. I worry a little bit of this transition phase that we're in. The same urgency isn't necessarily there because it's kind of like, why didn't I buy Star Trek The Next Generation on DVD a long time ago? It's because it was just there. And there was no urgency for me to buy it because it was always on Netflix. It felt like it was always going to be on Netflix. It felt like nothing was going to change until suddenly it did. The same thing is true of Lodge 49 is that I thought that, you know, it's kind of like, how did Burgess Meredith's character talk about the fact that he was still alive and grumpier old men? And he thought that God had just forgotten about him. I thought that God had just forgotten about Lodge 49 and that it was a line of code in some server somewhere and that it wasn't causing a lot of noise and that it would just stay up there forever. So if I was going to use what I'm not a tech guy, whatever method they used to rip that off of the website and make a torrent out of episodes of Lodge 49, I missed my window to do that. And a lot of people may have felt the same way, that the urgency to immediately create this pirated version of this media doesn't exist. And now, well, did anybody get Infinity Train before it went down? Did anybody get...
The answer is yes.
Yes,
it did.
They absolutely
and it's,
did.
And it's there. It's just, like I said, people have been so appeased by how the ease and the up until now, the value proposition of the streaming services have been, most people have been like, I'm going to pay $12 a month to Netflix.
But it's the same thing with like Disney Plus. I mean, again, the promise of the studio specific streaming networks is what's like that massive library in the palm of your hand, that the touch of your fingertips, you can bring up, you know, the Cat from Outer Space or, you know, the strongest, what was it? The one of those Kurt Russell college movies. I could just bring that up.
Right, the computer wore sneakers.
Yeah, it's just like, but instead you have a show like Willow, which came out in December, January, which wasn't even around for a full year before they took it down. Never got I saw a bunch of bootleg, you know, Blu-rays that are, you know, whatever, that people are making and selling on eBay before Disney discovers. But you know, it's kind of like, well, what do you do in the case where it's, you know, the assassination of Willow by the coward Disney Plus? I mean, what do you do when this thing you want to buy and you liked and you had no urgency to demand? It's just you turn on your streaming service one day and it's just gone, you know, erased from existence.
I mean, it honestly makes me a lot less likely to just get into things is really what it comes down to, is that like, I had a friend the other day send me this tweet, which I thought was pretty reactionary about how like, and I can't remember what it was referring to exactly, but it was Willow was definitely one of the things that it was talking about how this is the end of the cult classic. And I'm like, most cult classics existed before streaming. Right. Like there will always be smaller theaters that will find a way to show these things. There will always be people that pirate them or that have them at their disposal. That's just the nature of people. People have been doing this since like this kind of media has existed, and they always will. Right?
I worry a little bit that the death of the cult classic is taking away venues, legal venues where people can discover things that aren't super profitable and weird.
Do we care though?
Yeah, because
about
like,
legal venues.
Yeah,
though.
That's
do we
that's,
care if
I don't
if the businesses are the businesses that are should could still be making money off of Dawn of the Dead right now, but aren't because they're locked in some kind of stupid legal dispute. Do we care whether or not they make an extra few million dollars off of it? No.
But I'm also a coward in terms of things like, you know, BitTorrent nowadays. I'll take it secondhand from another person like they're my bookie. But I'm always a little I don't know. I guess I just assume that you're being spied on by every piece of technology you own, and I don't want to give a lawyer an excuse to send me a scary letter.
They aren't really prosecuting for piracy anymore. They really aren't.
Yeah, like, because the thing is that
it's privateering.
You kind of are, right? Somebody made this really good point, which is like, it's not that our devices are listening to us. It's that they know where we go and they know who we hang out with and they know who they're into. And so that's why you will see things. You'll have a conversation with somebody about something and then you'll get ads for it. It's like, well, yeah, because they probably Googled it and they're going to know your phone was in proximity to theirs. And so they're going to start, they're going to be like, well, if they know each other, if you were around this person, you're probably going to be into some of the same shit.
It's like I bought a replacement filter for an air filter that I have in my house. And now I get a bunch of ads for it. It's like, dudes, I don't collect them.
Right? No, it's exactly what happens to me. It's like I'm looking for some like big purchase to make. And then it's like, are you interested in the 2023 Honda? And I'm like, I have a brand new Honda. I don't need another Honda. Why are you do people just collect Hondas out here?
I will say, though, that piracy. Okay, so this is it's no longer in the phase where it's like, the MPAA or the RIAA is like suing grannies because their grandchildren came over and downloaded Metallica on their computer. All they do now is takedown requests. So for the stuff that is like super new, you know, when the Obi-Wan Kenobi episode 1 comes out, they use the DCMA and then whatever the European versions of the Interpol versions of that. And they just sort of kind of try to get them knocked out. They just be like, you have to get these servers to just like voluntarily delete these files. And so it's just a game of whack-a-mole. The thing is, it's too much. There's too much. They'll never be able to kill it. So they aren't doing large scale, like big piracy crackdown things. They don't care about it. In reality, for the number of decades they've been screaming about how much money they're losing for piracy, they came to realize that they're not losing that much money anyways. And so they were just going to focus on trying to like consolidate and, lord over us with these giant streaming libraries. They don't care about piracy anymore.
Advocating for a law I know they will never pass, but there's got to be something where if you've abandoned something and provided no legal opportunities for something, maybe after 5 years you have abandoned that copyright.
Because they want to. How dare you, Mike? How dare you impinge and infringe on their right to maybe possibly make $5 off of something in 50 years
and reboot it into 5 different TV shows or whatever? But it just seems like Dawn of the Dead, you mentioned, is a great example. Is that the last time there was a release of that was probably like 2008. The time there was a big DVD release of that movie, and it's caught up in God knows what kind of a fight. The same thing happened with the old Batman TV show, where I think it was like probably CBS and Warner Brothers were in the middle of a dick measuring contest about who owned what. And the result was that nobody got to watch anything with Adam West as Batman except for that old movie. That was the only one that ever got a release. And it was like they decided that they wanted to own 100% of it, even if it meant that all of us got 0% of it.
I'm pretty sure you can buy that old Batman series on 4K.
Yeah, there was a break in that dam, yeah. But there was like 10 years.
Oh, look at Strange Days, which is a movie that just recently, within the last year, went up on Max.
Yeah.
A place to watch HBO.
It is interesting to bring the piracy conversation back around to it, and we'll bridge to TCM, which is the place I want to leave it.
But
I think there's a bigger fault underneath this that's shaking that is going to give way. There are some things that do not exist past like a DVD release in some region or whatever. Like, for example, the version of the villain that I have, when we did our last podcast, La Vista Baby, the villain was taken from Dutch television because they'd somehow got their hands on an HD transfer from Warner or whoever it was that did that movie, Universal. And you'll be damned if you can find that. Did you get it on DVD, the villain?
I rented it on, this is going to make me sound even more like a dinosaur, on Netflix discs.
Yes. Okay. So you got a DVD of it, right?
Yeah, I got a DVD of it. But the thing is, Netflix disc, also another venue to see things for the first time.
Now like, going away.
It's going away in September. And it's like the sad thing. I may have been the only customer that was still using it, but it was a thing where I'm subscribed to Netflix, but there are things that are on Amazon. There are things that are on Hulu. There are things that are on a bunch of other streaming services, but they owned the DVD of it. at Netflix and they could rent it to me. So I didn't have to subscribe. I had to wait sometimes several days in between episodes, but that's fine. But it's we've kind of gone into this place where you don't just subscribe to one thing. You'd have to subscribe to like a
dozen. Everything. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the thing is, I think the value of something like Turner Classic Movies if it was just a cable channel, if this were 1995 and it were just a cable channel running movies that you could more or less get at the go down to the local store and buy, you know, and rent on VHS, that would be fine. However, Turner Classic Movies is a restoration and archival platform now. It's not just about, well, we're going to play the same copy of Mr. Smith Goes to Washington that's been scanned since, you know, 2004. They are actively taking stuff that probably only had a DVD release, scanning them, getting them restored, and having some actual archival information around them. And now, of course, the huge kerfuffle is the guy who's in charge of Max doesn't give a shit about TCM and just wants to dismantle it. But the problem is that it's not just a platform that they can transfer into a streaming platform that can show their IP in their vaults. It has this other archival aspect to it. It has film lovers and scholars and people who have technical jobs around preserving these sorts of things, and that will just cease to go away if they're just like, well, fuck it, this is not making us enough money.
To be so fucking greedy. I mean, the whole point of what you could do with a conglomerate company like that you own a bunch of small companies that may be less profitable than some of your big ones that are super profitable. Use your fucking Batman money to keep TCM around.
Yeah, but
that's usually how that's supposed to work, right?
We see this again and again, and I hate to go here because I don't want this conversation to devolve into things that I feel like it always devolves with us, but this is the problem with especially late-stage capitalism, right? It's like it's not about money in the long term. It's all about money now.
Yes.
Because these billionaires are children, and they only understand the next shareholder meeting. They only understand what Wall Street tells them to, which is why, like, Wall Street is the ultimate evil and all this shit. And it's like, it seems like that TCM thing kind of had a somewhat satisfactory conclusion because they got people involved that were like,
well, they got people rehired.
Yeah.
Because like Steven Spielberg and Paul Thomas Anderson
and
sent them a fucking letter and they got people who were fired rehired.
But like, how long is it going to be before we don't have filmmakers with that kind of clout?
Right.
I don't know. And I definitely, you know, I worry about it. I think, like, honestly, the one streaming channel I get the most out of is the Criterion channel.
Sure.
I think it's a fantastic channel. They are able to kind of license things for shorter periods of time and really showcase, a lot of really great stuff, and not just stuff from like this country, but a lot of short films and a lot of stuff from around the world that has a lot of really cool impact. But yeah, I'm totally aware that we live in a world that doesn't value that. Like, or at least we live in there's a culture building. And this is why, like, big tech is just the most awful thing ever. Because these fucking people don't care, right? It's like, yeah, I love my iPhone, whatever. But I don't lie to myself. These people do not give a shit about art. They do not give a shit about history. They only care about providing for shareholders.
Exactly.
Yeah. And they're monstrous. And I really hope people lose their jobs over this strike. I really, really
I do.
Oh. And I hope that also this is my favorite thing, is that it looks like our boy Elon is getting closer and closer to a margin call every day because of Twitter. And if that, I don't think people understand just how fucked he is, because this will not just destroy, like, they will take Twitter away. They will sell it.
Are you saying that it'd be less embarrassing for Mark Zuckerberg to beat him up?
I'm saying it might be the icing on the cake, because he will lose. He won't just lose Twitter. He will destroy Tesla too. So it's kind of like, oh, this is great, right? Like, this could act. We were all hopeful when it happened. Like,
I am so excited.
Maybe this will be super embarrassing for him. But now it actually looks like if there's a margin call and they sell his shares, Because right now he's paying over $1 billion a year in that loan that he took to buy Twitter.
Just on the interest.
Just on the interest. Fuck. And he is not making anywhere near, let's be clear, not making anywhere near that. Tesla stock is valued at 18 times what it actually is. And if they make a margin call, which basically says your stock is, we're worried that it is no longer going to be valued at what this loan is. So we are going to sell it and recoup our losses. And then we are going to sell Twitter. That will take down Tesla. He will lose everything. And I'm like, please.
I got to tell you, Joe. Please,
it would make this hellscape so much more livable if I could just live through this, please.
If the planet has to burn, can he burn too?
Oh, my God. Yeah, as like, long as he burns first, I'm totally okay.
I got to say, Joe, I haven't felt this excited since Trump got COVID.
I'm telling you, right? It is a very similar feeling, and I'm right there with you. Like, you know, this last few months for me has been really difficult for a number of reasons, and I'm like, it would be all worth it. It just would be all worth it if I could see that man fail so miserably that his picture goes in the dictionary next to the word failure.
Dancing in the streets. We'd all be dancing in the streets.
It's so good. It would be so good. All these butthurt, like, Elon bros crying. It's like, if I have to live in a world without Anthony Bourdain in it, or without Chris Cornell in it, or without Carrie Fisher in it, or any one of these amazing people, David Bowie, Alan Rickman, all these incredible people we've lost in the last 7 or 8 years, I want to live in a world where Elon Musk lost everything because of his stupid big fucking mouth. That would be beautiful to me. So every day I have a little bit of a spring in my step because I'm like, maybe today's the day. Maybe today's the day. I feel like I'm waiting for a letter from my sweetheart overseas. Like every day. It's like, oh, will it happen today?
Are we in the last 30 minutes of Uncut Gems for this guy?
God, we can all hope so.
Radio versus the Martians is hosted by Mike Gillis and Casey Doran. This podcast is recorded in beautiful Valverde in Seattle, Washington. Our chief engineer is Casey Dorn, and our editor is Mike Gillis. Our original theme music is written and performed by James Wetzel. Special thanks to Sam Mulvey, Rob Kelly, James Wetzel, Paul Rue, Tobiah Panshin, Scott Kramer, Kyle Hepworth, and Todd Maxfield Matsumoto. Please take the time to rate and review our show on iTunes and Stitcher, and follow us on Facebook and Twitter. And if you'd like to support the show financially, please consider becoming one of our Patreon subscribers. Even just a dollar a month gives you access to exclusive episodes. And you can always find us online at radioversusthemartians.com.
And don't give a hoot. Drink up, me hearties, yo ho. Yo ho, yo.